Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hello, Alfonso Dager here. I'm a manager of the LAC DevSecOps team for FedEx, Latin America and Caribbean Division.
Alfonso, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Very excited about this conversation. It's even more excited because I don't get a chance to talk to a lot of fellow South Floridians. So this is definitely a nice benefit. Before we dive in and talk a lot more about your current role with FedEx, give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that.
Absolutely. So I'm coming up on 12 years at FedEx, all here in our South Florida offices. It's great. Our office is based in Miami, but we are the regional headquarters for Latin America and the Caribbean. So everything from Mexico down to Chile, Brazil, and everything out there throughout the Caribbean. Myself, so born and raised in South Florida, I went to the University of Miami, did computer engineering there, then went off to Georgia Tech to do computer engineering for a master's degree. I interned about four different times with IBM. My goal was to be an IBMer. However, I graduated May 2009. So that might sound significant. It was really the bottom of the recession. So as a result, humbling experience, I had a master's in computer engineering and actually moved back home with my parents because there were no jobs available. And after some what I call 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon type of recruiting and trying to get myself out there, I was able to come across this position with FedEx. Started off as an automated tester, then moved into development role and then architecture. Then eventually about 3 years ago, this past October, I became a manager of the LAC DevSecOps team. And that was exciting. It was a new team. So it was myself, one other gentleman. And between the two of us, we got things started and now have a team of 13 that do all kinds of work throughout the region.
Wow, that's super exciting. Very diverse career. I appreciate you sharing that. So you've spent quite a few years at FedEx and in that particular industry, I'm sure you've seen the markets go in all kinds of different directions, iterations, very cyclical. What are the different trends for you personally that are very exciting these days? What are you researching? What are you personally very passionate about these days, whether that's technology, whether that's something specific to your industry? Just share your thoughts from that perspective.
Absolutely. So really two sides of it. Now on the tech side, something I've really been into is everything ops. I don't know if, you know, we're not exactly adopting it right now, but the way companies are coming off with these different iterations of everything ops or AI ops or ARC ops, I find that interesting because we're finding ways to really automate more and more layers of the tech stack, which sounds great, but I always approach it with a little skepticism because what happens is when you automate everything, all the layers going down, especially the new folks, they tend to not understand what's happening under the sheets, if you will, right? What's happening that's allowing all that automation to work? Because when it breaks, then everyone kind of looks at each other like, how do we solve this? But the concept is fascinating because the more what I've seen in my experience is the developers get bogged down. They're not spending their time coding. They're spending their time trying to figure out how to get things up and running or working with the sysadmins to get things working, which is great, but then they're not developing. So by getting this everything ops concept up and running, we're really able to let the developers develop, the sysadmins be sysadmins and really expand the people's responsibilities in what they're meant to be doing. Mm-hmm. And another side, a lot of my research goes into team building, right? Especially now, the world was already virtual and now it's even more virtual. So how do you keep a team together and strong when we don't see each other face-to-face, maybe ever? I have team members in India, in Argentina. So a lot of my research has been how to kind of keep the team together and how to keep those bonds strong when we're not physically together.
Right. Absolutely. No, definitely very exciting trends, especially, you know, on the upside. I can definitely agree with you from that perspective. Mm-hmm. I hear that in all different domains. When it comes to technology, it's definitely a trend that's been on the upward that we've all seen. You've mentioned also team building, which is an interesting space for me. You know, building high performing teams has always been very challenging, but at the same time, very rewarding endeavor, which never ends. And I'm sure that's at top of the mind for a lot of executives out there. Share some of your perspective, some of your strategies that really help you as a person, that really help you as a leader succeed in this space to lead and build high performing teams.
Absolutely. So a few things, just like anything in life. Number one, balance. Number two, you have to make time for the important things. So what I've done is with our team, and you know, everyone is over capacity, if you will, in terms of work that needs to be done, but I've made sure to carve out time. Number one, one-on-ones with all team members. And normally it would be, if they were local, we do it once every 2 weeks. If they were offshore, once a week. Since everyone has gone to 100% work from home, I make sure to do one-on-ones with each team member once a week. And it's 30 minutes where I give them a chance to, it's their meeting. I don't bring an agenda. They can talk personal. They can talk about work. And those are important. So I know we're talking about teams and I'm giving a one-on-one answer, but it's important because it helps to make them feel part of the team, build that trust one-on-one, and that expands to the rest of the team. So in terms of making time, on the more social side, what we'll do is a virtual, what I call virtual cafecito time. So being from South Florida, you get that reference. Cafecito in this case is the what we call the jet fuel of coffee, Cuban coffee. And what we'll do is I'll set a half hour Zoom meeting Friday afternoon. I tell everyone one rule, no work talk. Bring a crazy hat or fun mug and let's get together and have those conversations. Why? Well, normally that's what you would do in passing in the hallway, right? And build those relationships. We can't do that now. Maybe in between meetings, you know, when a meeting's starting late. Now we're making time in order to bring that together. So we're making that, building that teamwork. Another one that I've been made sure to make time for is tech talks. And not, you know, not like the big, you know, TED talks that everyone does, but within the team, ideally every Friday or every other Friday morning for an hour, we'll have someone from the team present on what they've been working on, or have them go and work on an innovative project that isn't their primary responsibility, but give them a little bit of freedom to say, hey, what interests you? What do you want to do some research on? And give them time. Don't give them a deadline and say, all right, whenever you have a little bit of downtime, work on that. And then bring that to one of the tech talks. And it's amazing the conversations that get started. And even from team members that may not be as technically strong or their presentation is nowhere near their area, it gets the conversations going. And it's amazing how after those meetings, everyone, they're starting to connect the dots and say, hey, I'm working on this over here. What they just presented, I think could work. And you know what? Sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes it does. And that's the best part. So making the time to do those team buildings has been essential, especially, you know, I tell them, guys, I know you have a lot of other things going on, but let's make time for these meetings. And that has been key to keeping the team flowing. In some cases, even better than before everyone started working from home, because we already had a number of offsite employees and they were feeling disconnected. Well, now everyone's working from home. They're feeling even more connected now.
Right. Absolutely. Definitely the strategies you've mentioned resonate on so many levels. At the end of the day, demonstrating genuine interest in the growth of those that are around you at work, not coming across as very transactional. I think those are just very simple yet oftentimes overlooked components of building high performing teams. So thank you for sharing that. Those are absolutely very, very, very diverse and interesting strategies, which I can definitely see a lot of other executives taking advantage of. Mm-hmm. To take that a little bit further, I want to double click on the aspect of building a high performing team through talent acquisition in terms of the war for talent out there is real. The war on retention is even another layer of complexity. Mm-hmm. Share your thoughts on how do you stay competitive in this space, in this market, in this fully virtual remote environments as well, to be able to not only attract the top talent, but then retain it as well.
Absolutely. And there's so many challenges now, especially as you mentioned with the remote piece. There's companies that people wouldn't consider because they would have to relocate. Well, now is an option because those companies are making positions that are available fully remote. So now the competition has grown to try and bring in this talent. So really, for me, it starts way before the position is posted, right? So what I like to do is stay connected to start with local universities, University of Miami, FIU. They have great engineering programs. So I try to stay connected with the student organizations. So that way I'm building I'll go old school for a second, Rolodex. What our younger viewers may recognize is the LinkedIn connections, right? Keep those being built up. I stay connected with recruiters. So that way we already have a relationship going forward. And when a position is posted, they know more or less what my team is about and what kind of recruiting I like to do. And actually with interviews that I've already done, I actually try and keep up with candidates that they were great fits for the position, but for some other reason, logistics reason perhaps, they didn't take the position. I stay connected with them because as other positions, other opportunities open up, you'd be surprised on, they're just waiting on the right opportunity or something changes in their life and they want to be part of the team. So really keeping those connections is key. So that way, when a position does post, a lot of that legwork has already been completed and it's all about relationship building. So if they know who you are and know the kind of team that you've built, then they're more willing to pique their interest when a position does open up.
I want to pull the thread a little bit further on the aspect that's also extremely challenging. And I'm talking about interviewing because I've seen, I've been on all three different sides. I've been a consultant candidate. I've been the hiring manager, and I'm also involved with a staffing company as well that really helps organizations find the best talent. So I've seen all different flavors of, the views on the interview. And to summarize that, I overall think it's an area that needs a lot of improvement because interviews are mostly based on that past personal experience where the focus is more on which weaknesses that I can tolerate in that particular candidate versus what are the strengths that are missing on my team. And does that candidate possess that to be able to fill that void? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on interviewing? How do you structure them? What does an interview maybe even look like with you? But more importantly, I'm curious to hear what do you look for in the responses when you talk to candidates?
Absolutely. Great question. Great topic, because there's so many different ways to approach it. So here's how I do it. My interviews are three steps. Number one, a pre-screen. Number two, a panel interview with a fellow manager or two. And number three, a team/technical interview. And I'll explain each right now. But the reason why I do it that way is so that we can get different aspects, different viewpoints on the candidates. So the pre-screen, that looks like basically a 20 to 30 minute phone call with me once a candidate will put in the application. And that's just to get the basics down. And it's amazing how many people I've screened out because they misunderstood what the position, the posting read. Salary concerns, it's not the salary range they're looking for, things like that. So it helps to weed out many of the candidates before I bring in a fellow manager to do a panel interview. And it gets some of the initial questions out of the way. The panel interview, that's required by HR, but it's great because it'll be myself plus one or two other IT managers. And it's a formal interview, 1 hour generally. We ask 6 to 7 questions with follow-ups. What do those look like? So for the panel, it's a mix of behavior questions and I don't say like technical questions, but technical questions nonetheless. And what am I looking for there? I'm looking for confidence? What is their attitude towards the questions? Especially if they don't know the answer right away, how do they respond? Do they get nervous? One thing I like to say is my BS meter going off or not? I have a technical background, so I'm generally pretty good about sensing, are they trying to BS their way through a question or not? I actually prefer a candidate that will say, you know, I don't know the answer to that. However, in my experience, here's something that's related, and let me, and they talk it through with us. So that's what I'm looking for. And there's one question. So on the technical, you know, ask things about agile, because we use the safe agile methodology, about end-to-end testing, because it's the QA side of DevSecOps. Test data, because that's something that, especially in the QA world, they're all about automating the scripts. But once you get the scripts automated, well, your next bottleneck is data. So that's a big focus we've had. So I want to pick their brain. And really, it's more about, you know, an AB. It's not an ABCD answer. It's, I want your view on this. And then behavior. How do you respond in group situations? And then I end with this question, and it's more philosophical. To you, what does testing mean to you? And I follow up with, what does quality assurance mean to you? And it's interesting how that one actually gets the most people nervous, because they're not expecting such an open question. And I want to pick the brain. How do you think about testing? Because when it comes to QA and DevSecOps, I want someone who thinks a little differently than the rest. So if they get through that, then it's a 1 hour interview with my team where it's a technical interview, and I'll log in, I'll introduce the person, and I'll leave my team to it. And why? Yes, there's a technical side of it, and they'll get, you know, into the weeds on all the automation tools and philosophies, et cetera, but also personalities. I'll ask my team, and I have my trusted team members, who I ask them afterwards, all right, does this person fit with the team? And I can use all the information along with what I saw in order to make a decision on the candidate. And honestly, it's, if 10 people apply, 6 or 7 get removed in the pre-screen, 3 will make it to the panel interview, and 1 or 2 will get to the final interview. So that's with that type of filtering, it's, that process does what I want. So that's been a big key there.
Right, absolutely. I want to share with you a little bit of a recommendation that still resonates with me on so many levels. It's a friend who is currently at LinkedIn, and one of the interview questions that he usually asks to test for personality of a particular candidate is, what can you do really well with your eyes closed? And it's an interesting question, because, and I put myself in the shoes of a candidate for a moment, how would I answer that such question? And overall, the intent of the question is to gauge whether, especially for technical roles, whether you start going off and, oh, I can do JavaScript, and I can do all kinds of, you know, open source API integrations with my eyes closed. And in reality, the intent is to really check if the candidate is aiming to, you know, at the end of the day, just be boastful and only talk about amp up their own skills, versus talking a little bit something that maybe showcases how humble they are and how, you know, maybe of a team player. So I thought that was such a powerful question that's, you know, seems so subtle, but at the same time reveals a lot about the personality of a particular candidate. So I just wanted to add that to all of the great strategies that you were talking about in terms of how you structure the interviews, because it's, we can probably talk about that particular space for the rest of the episode, because it's so complex and so interesting. For you to stay abreast of everything that goes on in your industry, in your domain, what's your content diet looking like? Share with us the sources that you consume on a daily basis.
Absolutely. So I try to make the sources diverse to get those different perspectives and angles. So number one, IEEE organization, they have the Computer and Software Engineering Societies. There's a membership that's involved. However, those societies, they release monthly magazines where they talk about software and computer engineering. And it's great, because I know who reads magazines anymore, but the writing's excellent, and it does two things. Number one, they discuss techniques and technologies that are 5 or 10 years down the road. And they also give a historical perspective on some of the tech as well, which I think is important because, as we know, history repeats itself. So if you can see some of those tech trends in the past, we'll see it happening again in the future. Then another one, Flipboard.com. They have all types of different offerings, but they have one that's a tech briefings. So they'll do a Monday tech briefing and it gives you a list of articles and current events that are happening in the tech world. Everything from the Theranos trial to more information on Facebook switching to Meta, you know, things like that that are happening. And, you know, they're not all DevSecOps per se in QA, but they're in the tech world. And then they'll have some more specific, you know, DevSecOps items. Another one for staying current, actually Reddit. Reddit has some great technology and software engineering subreddits, good information, interesting discussion as well. And then finally, books. I love reading. I don't do the e-readers. I do the physical books, just something about having it in your hand as you're reading. All kinds of different books, a lot of nonfiction about what's happening in the industry or about leadership skills. And that's been, that's kind of my general diet when it comes to content.
To take that a little bit further, I always ask, what is one book that you always recommend to others and why is that? Which one is yours?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I'm going to go with Emotional Intelligence by Daniel Goldman. Why emotional intelligence? Like, wait, this is a tech interview. What are we talking about here? from what I've seen as a manager, and this applies to management and to individual contributors, with our industry, change is constantly happening and we're always having to pivot. And there's just so many big projects, and having strong emotional intelligence allows you as a person to stay balanced, be mindful and be able to handle these changes and all these stressful projects in a more powerful way. Mm-hmm. So that's actually why I go with that recommendation, because no matter which part of the industry you're in, if you're able to internalize that, it makes you a better employee and a better team contributor as well.
Right. No, definitely great recommendation for our listeners. We'll make the title available in the show notes. Mm-hmm. Alfonso, last but not least, what is one career advice or maybe series of advice that you had received early on in your career mm-hmm. that you continuously refer to and also share with others as you step into more of executive and leadership roles and you're leading the teams? Share with us some of those.
Absolutely. So number one, don't take yourself too seriously. I see folks come through and I did it when I was younger for sure, where everything was just monumental and huge decisions around the corner. No, just take it a day at a time. So don't take yourself too seriously, number one. Number two, with that said, make sure you show up. 90% of the challenge is showing up, being present and putting your best foot forward. I've had a number of pre-screens. I've had a few interviews where we canceled the interview after two or three questions because the person wasn't seeming interested. And when you have that, those people that are stay connected and show and bring that best foot forward every day, it gets recognized, and not right away. That leads to number three, where what you do now matters in the future. I've seen folks where they were up for a position and didn't get it because of something that they didn't inappropriately earlier in the career. And then on the flip side, by always putting your best foot forward and being present, people have recognized that and eventually down the road got that promotion that they were looking for because they impressed whoever it was that was in that position many years in the past. So those are some key advice, pieces of advice that I received and I use every single day.
I love it. Definitely powerful, and appreciate you sharing. And just overall, Alfonso, I can't thank you enough for your time today. It was very short and insightful conversation, at least for me. What I love doing with all the guests is do a follow-up recording in about a year where we revisit the conversation from a year ago and see if everything that we've discussed still makes sense, still applies. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you as well.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Looking forward to it. Thank you so much for having me on, and I'm glad to be part of the show.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.